You're listening to the Toolstation Western League podcast with Ian Knuckles and Tom Hiscott.
Welcome, listeners, to episode 36 of the Toolstation Western League podcast with me, Ian Knuckles. Now, normally, of course, I'm joined by Tom Hiscott, but he's having a well-earned break. So I've had to call in a very, very special guest to replace Tom, because it'd have to be very special to replace Tom. He's irreplaceable. It is none other than Andy Stone. Now, if that name doesn't jump off the page at you, it may be because he's better known as Stoner, the man behind the Footy Watch Twitter account, if we're allowed to still call it that. Andy, thank you very much for taking the time to join us on the podcast. It's a real pleasure having you on.
No problems, Ian. Thank you for asking me to step up and, like you said, step in for Tom, who does a great job. Normally, I'm tapping buttons behind the screen, so to be speaking is a little bit different for me, but hopefully I can do the podcast justice.
Well, I'm sure you can, and that was a rather ham-fisted introduction by my good self there, because obviously the Footy Watch social media handle is something that's really well known across the Western League, across many leagues in our area. For those people who may not be familiar with your work, can you just tell us a little bit about what it is you do?
So, yeah, basically, I glued to the Footbology app pretty much through most of the week and pick games that ones, like you say, that stand out in front, and I think, well, that should be a good one to go to. It does become difficult sometimes picking a game to choose, because every game for me is brilliant to visit. But so I basically get myself along. What I started doing from the turn of the year is I get myself to the ground a couple of hours before, take some pictures behind the scenes of like the ground itself, changing rooms, turnstiles, all the sort of bits and pieces and quirky parts of the ground to begin the posts on my Twitter page. And then obviously, hopefully, not all the time, but a lot of the time recently, I've been able to have a little quick brief catch-ups with the chairmen, the managers, captains sometimes of the team, and then obviously photographs of all the volunteers, the hard-working volunteers that do the turnstiles and the tea hut, the kit men, et cetera, and then obviously compile a live report of the game as and when it happens with pictures and videos, and occasionally I manage to grab the goals. So it's basically live as it happens, is unedited, is a little bit raw, and might be the odd spelling mistake, but yeah, that's pretty much me really.
And how long have you been doing it?
My first game I actually done was Hallam against Shepton Mallet down at Hallam, and John Burr, who was associated with Shepton Mallet at the time, pulled me to one side after and said, "This is just what the league needs." He said, "This is brilliant," and I said, "I've only ever done this today." It was like my first time, and that was just writing. There was no pictures or videos. It was just basic tweaks as the game was going on. And he said, "Oh, you ought to do this more. This is the league's crying out for something like this." And that was about 4.5, nearly 5 years ago. So that was when it all began. The first sort of 18 months was a whirlwind of, it was mental. Everybody was on board of it and visiting various grounds, clubs on board with warm-up T-shirts and various things, raising awareness for the charity as well as Footy Watch. And then I had a slight change in jobs which dictated my movements, so I couldn't go as much as I wanted to, but I was still getting out and about. And then obviously we have the pandemic, which sort of kept us all in, which, you know, couldn't do any football at all. And then started again a little bit more, and then I changed jobs again, and I was based in Gloucester, so my wings were clipped. Just couldn't get to as many games as I wanted to, so it's kind of simmering down a little bit. And then fortunately I've gone back to one of my old bosses, which has freed up loads more time for myself, and Footy Watch has been reborn, so to speak. I've had some great advice and sort of little ideas and bits and pieces from John Burr, I mentioned earlier, from Shepton. He's given me a few sort of little quirks and different things that, you know, he does a bit of ground hopping himself, so things that he thought people would be interested in and stuff to add into it. And like I said, since the turn of the year has really, really took off, and I find myself sort of all sorts of places. I was down Cornwall a few weeks ago, sort of clubs in and around Gloucester and Oxford, obviously, as well as my, you know, my ones in Bristol, which they're the ones really for me that have been most supportive, because obviously this is all based around the Bristol charity with the fundraising. So it's good to keep myself busy within the local area. But like I said, some days I just jump in the van and I could be 2 hours to go and watch a game. So, but yeah, I love it. Really, really enjoying it. And like I said, it's nice to get the recognition. Not that I do it for that, but I am surprised by the amount of people that are actually on board with reading it and taking time and appreciate it. So, yeah, just really enjoying it at the moment. It's really good.
Well, you've mentioned the charity work a couple of times there. I know you raise money for cystic fibrosis, don't you?
That's correct, yeah. So it's a charity based in Bristol. They're called the Cystic Fibrosis Comfort Fund. And basically they provide support to families and individuals for people affected by cystic fibrosis. Basically, it was formed in 1991 by people that were associated with the BRI for children. There's various trustees that are on the committee that have been in the medical sort of scene within that environment, and they are the four founders of what the charity is about. So, yeah, and all the money that's raised, it goes within a 50-mile radius of the Bristol area. So it's nice to be, obviously I do it because of my friend who I lost, Sam, when he was 21. So that's why my affiliation is obviously to this cause. I've got three children, but none of them have got cystic fibrosis themselves. But because of Sam, this has enabled me to continue, in his memory and do everything I do through CF. So, yeah, recently I've had some incredible donations. Some that's just blew me away, to be honest. Cadbury Heath, most recently, they donated £300 to the charity. They had a memorial bench for Terry, who passed away at the club, and it got burnt. And this was a few years ago, and I think I'd sort of started a bit of a campaign to raise funds to replace the bench, and they were able to replace it, and with the money they had over, they've donated it to cystic fibrosis, which is brilliant, beyond any words, really. And then I was at Helston, and the players at Steve Massey chipped in and done £150. I went to Newham. Newham played against Chipping Sodbury, and I covered that game, and Chipping Sodbury donated 25% of the gate receipt, which was £100. And then Newham matched their donation as well, because they were the team they were playing on the day. Yeah, so it's crazy, really. You know, I just think I'm just one person who just enjoys football, trying to do my best to sort of raise awareness and of local football and some money at the same time for the charity. But it's been incredible, to be honest. The support's been fantastic.
It's wonderful, Stoner, to hear you talking about that, and it's something that we'll return to later in the podcast. But we'll get on with the normal meat and drink of the Tool Station Westernly podcast, and we've got two interviews on this week's edition. Now's the Inticketum joint boss Nick Steadman joins us, and also Will Justin, the manager of Bitten. We will be looking at the games played on Saturday the 6th of April. Still some weather disruption, I'm very sorry to say. But we'll kick things off, Stoner, with an 8-goal thriller at Bridgewater United. Now, Bridgewater certainly going well at the top of the table, and I would have had them as clear favourites against Ilfracombe Town. But Ilfracombe put up a real fight in this one, didn't they?
Bridgewater held off a late charge from Ilfracombe to eventually prevail 5-3 at Fairfax Park. The full-time result would have been scarcely believable much of the afternoon, with Jay Murray's second-minute effort followed by Josiah McKell as Bridgie took complete control. Substitute Jack Taylor then extended the lead to 4 shortly after half-time before Ilfracombe staged a remarkable late fight-back. Harry Stevens scored twice, with Jack Magrosso once, in a wild 5-minute spell which suddenly saw Town trail 4-3 with 10 minutes left on the clock. Fortunately, the home side then expelled any chance of more late drama with a wind-assisted corner from Jake Llewellyn nestling into the back of the visitor's net to cut them 2 goals clear.
Now, moving on to Falmouth Town, you mentioned just now, Stoner, that you'd had a trip down to Cornwall. Did you go to Helston?
I went to Helston, yes. I was hoping to do a double header, to be fair. I planned it with the fixtures that Bodmin were playing on the Friday night. So I was going to grab their game, stay in Bodmin, and then drive down for the Helston game on the Saturday. But Bodmin's was called off, I thought, because of weather, but I found out afterwards that they had some electrical lighting issues or something, which is why it was postponed. And then the game was rescheduled for the Tuesday, but obviously we were coming back. So yeah, it was Helston on the Helston Brixham on the Saturday.
Well, I tried to get down to Cornwall myself not that long ago. Wanted to catch a Falmouth game because obviously we've been hearing great things about their exploits in the Vars, but also their incredible home support. And that continued on Saturday. 531 were there for the visit of high-flying Clevedon Town. And I think this was a real statement of intent victory, wasn't it, Stoner?
Yeah, I mean, it says, to be fair, like, I've heard a lot about their support as well, the F Troop, I think they're known as, so it's definitely somewhere I need to get to myself. But Falmouth continued progression at the table to reach new heights on Saturday after a 4-0 win over Clevedon, which helped them move up to second spot. The highly anticipated contest ended in disappointing circumstances following an injury to Caleb Selway. But the Cornish side were in control for much of the afternoon. Two first-half goals put the hosts ahead at the break with a 17-minute header from Ruben Wilson, followed up on the cusp by half-time by Oscar Massey penalty. The score remained 2-0 for most of the game until Selway's late injury, with Massey then scoring twice, extended into the added time period to complete a match-winning hat-trick and a 4-0 victory.
Well, I think if you need to get down there again, I certainly need to get down there again, because I'd hoped to kick off our relationship with Cornwall Mind, and by doing a bucket collection down there, it would be great to get down and meet the much-celebrated F-Troop. One final game for us to review in the Premier Division, and that is the match between Nailsea and Tickenham and Brixham. Now, Nailsea and Tickenham, I think, have continued to impress this season, but I thought that Brixham would have too much for them at the weekend. And I was wrong, Stoner, wasn't I?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I had a visit myself to Nailsea against Clevedon for the local derby of the bank holiday period. And I was massively impressed with both sides. But obviously in this one, Nailsea and Tickenham were the day's winners, with Oscar Collins scoring late on to help them beat Brixham in a 2-1 win, having taken the 11-minute lead through Luke Osgood. The Swags saw their lead disappear when in-form Josh Parry levelled for the away side. But then with 5 minutes left on the clock, Collins was able to turn the ball home to help Nailsea secure all 3 points.
Well, that was all the excuse I needed to get Nick Steadman back onto the podcast. Of course, the joint manager at Nailsea and Tickenham. And we reflected on that game against Brixham. It was never going to be an easy game for the Swags. But we talked about how delighted Nick was with that performance and the 3 points.
Brixham were—we knew they're a good side, and they've hit a lot of good form. They've been consistent really throughout the season. I think they sit in around eighth, not far off the playoffs. And I can remember playing them at their place, and we beat them 3-2 there, which was obviously a massive win. But to do the double over them this season is something to obviously be proud of. Tough game. Good game, but yeah, I think we deserved it. And if I'm honest, it's been coming. We had a good result against Clevedon the week before, where we drew 1-1, where we really took it to the wire, and we had probably the better opportunities in that game. So we felt a little bit hard done by, but that could have gone either way, to be fair. And the same with the week before, away to Falmouth, only losing 1-0. So we've come a long way in ourselves, and I think, and I hope to think, that people can see that in the results that we've had as of late.
Well, I wanted to have a chat with you about those two games against Clevedon and Falmouth, because I know from my visit before Christmas that derby game against Clevedon Town for you, and obviously everybody else involved with the club, is it's something that you're really looking forward to. And I guess that to get that draw against Clevedon must have been a really positive result for many people associated with the club. Just goes to show how far you've come.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can only speak highly of Alex White and what he's done at Clevedon, and I suppose with the resources he's got and his budget that he's got isn't the biggest and the best in the league. But what he's done is a fantastic achievement. So I can only appreciate, I suppose, in what he's done and what I want to try and achieve moving forward in the future. So that result for us was great. Like I said, I kind of come off the pitch a bit disappointed, really, because I felt like we could have and we should have won that game. But if you said to me before the game, would you take a one-all draw with the team that are second in the league, I'd have probably snapped your hand off. So yeah, we've definitely come a long way, and it's credit to certainly the lads that have stuck with us through this season. It's been a real big kind of transitional period, to be fair. So yeah, we'd have taken it. We took a point, and we'd have taken a point before the game. But yeah, reflect on it now. I think we could have probably actually got the 3 points there, but you know, beggars can't be choosers.
And talking about going a long way, they don't come much longer than Falmouth Town. Now, of course, Falmouth have been in incredible form this season, particularly in the FA Vars. They had that fantastic run. And, of course, one of the things we know about Falmouth is their incredible home support. Now, bearing in mind that when we were speaking last season, you were in our first division. To go to a place like Falmouth and be competitive, which is what the 1-0 scoreline certainly suggests to me that you were, I mean, what did that mean for you and your players?
Unbelievable experience, really. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that. I think there was 550, 560 there on the day, and they've got the replica shirts, they've got the flags, they've got the drums, they've got the flags. Obviously a lovely setup, lovely clubhouse, but it was packed from head to toe. And I must say, what a great club. Lovely people as well, and there's a lot of people that wanted to help and wanted to support and things like that, which was great. For our lads, you know, it's playing the game, not the occasion, which it has been for quite a few games this season, and certainly last when we were pushing for promotion. But you know, there was lots of positives to take from it. Falmouth are a very strong side, and I still think that they will win the league, if I'm honest, just because of their consistency. They've got a game plan that works. It's very, very thorough. The transition from back to front is very effective, and a lot of their goals are quite similar, but because it's so effective, it's very difficult to stop, and you can work on it in training, and you can look at the VO back and things like that. But they've got players in the right positions that can cause and really kind of hurt you. And we went with a game plan to kind of come out with a low block and be patient for probably 60, 70 minutes and then really try and hurt them towards the end. And that's what we did. And we were really, really unlucky. We were missing Lucas Vowles, who's our number nine, and we're missing two centre midfielders, which I think on another day, if you had them in the team, then those chances might have, and if the chances fell to them, then they might have taken them. But that's been the story of our season quite a lot, and I don't want to make excuses, because you've got to trust the squad that you've got and the depth that you've got, and you know, the lads that have come in have done a fantastic job. But it was unlucky, but if you looked at the overall game, they were certainly the better side with regards to possession and the way they played their football. So, you know, they did deserve to probably get the 3 points, in all honesty.
You're 10th at the moment in the table, which sort of nestles you nicely in mid-table. Now, I know obviously we've spoken before about in previous seasons, you've gone on, of course, incredible winning runs. So you've got used to being towards the top of the table. But given that this is your first season at this level, I don't think that there's any reason to be underwhelmed that you're 10th. Certainly, I mean, without wishing to sort of insult anybody at the club, it feels that you continue to punch above your weight. I mean, how do you view your team's consistency this season? Are you happy with the way that they've been able to pick up wins against teams that you've been more competitive against? And perhaps does that make it more understandable when you come up short against the likes of Falmouth and Buckland?
Really good question. And obviously, I think about this every single day, to be honest, because for the last two, three seasons, I think it is, we've been in fantasy land, and I think before this season, we'd won 86 games out of 91. So we only had lost five games in 91 games. So to experience it, it's a massive learning curve for certainly myself and Jamie and the rest of the club. We had a goal to be top half, that's where we wanted to be, and that's where we thought we could be come the end of the season, and it's still obviously very achievable. But you've got to take it, you've got to be realistic. You know, we are one of the smallest clubs in the Prem. Probably, again, budget-wise and things like that, we're probably near the bottom as well. But we've made it work. And, again, that is credit to everybody off the pitch that makes sure that we've got everything that we need. But ultimately, it's down to the lads on the pitch. And we've had to sign too many players this year until we got it right. And a couple of big signings that we made in the summer had long-term injuries, and you know, two or three of them were out for the whole season, so they'll be back next year, fingers crossed. But we've now found that balance where if we can keep what we've got, our goal and aspiration has to be top six next season. We've got to go for playoffs, and I think that's kind of the mindset. But if you said to me you'll come 10th in your first season in the Prem, you've got to be happy with that. Because there's teams in this league that have been established for a lot longer than us, many, many years, you know, and we've had comfortable wins and victories against them. So we have come a long way, and I do have to look at the bigger picture, because it's very easy to sometimes have that tunnel vision of you win the cup, you win the league, you win game after game after game. But coming up and stepping up into this league, it's a huge difference in quality compared to Division One, I personally think. A lot of teams in this league don't really have weaknesses, whereas in Division One, there's always a weakness within a team, and you find out that very, very quickly. But this year, yeah, it's a different ball game. So, yes, we've got to be happy with the top 10 finish. I think the chairman and the rest of the committee, etc., and all the supporters involved in the club will be happy with that. And, you know, I think the lads can see we're moving in the right direction. So that's why I'm confident that the players that we want to keep will go again next year and give it another go to see what we can do once we've established ourselves in the Premier League.
Obviously, you've talked there a lot about what the club have done to develop and what the players have done to develop. And I think it's important that people who perhaps aren't familiar with your story, your club's story, appreciate that you came from county football into our first Division One promotion and now find yourself playing Step 5 football. But when you look back over the last couple of seasons, on a personal level, how have you developed as a coach? Do you think that you are a better coach today than you were, say, 2 years ago?
Oh, massively, 100%. And you have to be. If you want players to want to play for you, and management and committee members and supporters to back you, you have to be able to accept development and want to learn, because no one knows it all, and you're very naive if you think that. And to be fair, you know, obviously the season that we had in the county league of going unbeaten and things like that, that's a fantastic achievement. But you then realize that, well, hang on, you're now approaching people with a lot more experience than you, a lot of a better understanding of the game than you. So you always try and take pointers, and no matter what manager I speak to, whoever we play against, I'll always listen, and I'll always be up for learning different things. And one person I will mention that I think for me has actually really supported me is Dave Pearce, the ex-Bridgewater manager who's now at Exmouth. We've become quite close over the last probably 6-7 months. And just listening to him, the way he talks about it, the way he sees the game, the way he understands it, I've taken a lot from him, and I've tried to obviously implement that into my team, because I think the football that he was playing when he was Bridgewater manager was probably some of the best that I've seen. I certainly think I've developed. I've done this now for five years maybe at Nails and Tickenham, and then probably three years at Portishead Town. So I'm only 35, but I've got a fair bit of experience under my belt. And at the end of the day, it's the results, it's the positions in the table where you earn your respect and your trust off people. So I'd like to think that me and Jamie have done that the best we possibly can. But, you know, it comes down to honesty, it comes down to communication, it comes down to delivery, it comes down to preparation. But it's a really big part of our lives, and it's something that does eat up a lot of time, but it's something that we're passionate about, that we love and we enjoy. So, yeah, we just want to keep pushing and keep, I suppose, doing the best we can for the club that we're at.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to talk about the weather. I say unfortunately because actually your club is something of a rarity. I see you've got 5 games left to play this season. Obviously, other clubs yes. have got substantially more than that. But, I mean, how has the weather impacted on your preparations for matches and to keep the team consistent and at a good level over the last couple of months?
Frustrating. Very frustrating. But it's at your hands. And, again, I go back to the people off the pitch, what they try and do to prepare the ground, the pitch, to make sure that it is playable. There's so much time and effort that goes into it, and, you know, credit to them. We've been fortunate to a certain extent that we haven't had to have any horrible midweekers, should we say. I'm actually on my way down to Welton now. We've got Welton tonight, but that's the furthest away game we've had in a midweek game. And obviously, you know, the league's extended it by a couple of weeks just to obviously try and fit all these in. The ones that, you know, I feel sorry for are, you know, your Portishead, your Brislington's in Div 1, who have, you know, got 10 games in 19 days or something. Yeah. And it's just ridiculous. And especially when those teams are competing for the league and the title, you know, it's a real tough ask for them to be able to deliver the results that they need. And obviously, you know, player safety. But it's out of your hands. It really, really is. So, you know, yes, it's been difficult, but everybody's had the same problem. So you've just got to get on with that, really. You can't moan about it too much because it's not going to get you anywhere. It's not going to change the decision, you know.
Now, you mentioned you're on your way to Welton Rovers for a game tonight. Mm. They're fighting for every point at the moment, and there have been positive signs of them turning their form around, so this isn't going to be an easy game for you and your team, is it?
No, absolutely not. No game's an easy game in this league, which we very quickly realised. We played them, I think it was about 2 months ago now, at home. I can't remember the score. I think it was 4-5, if I'm honest. I think we were very good on the day. But then I, you know, the manager left and he brought a new manager in, and I've seen that they signed a few players. Joe Paradise was with us for a bit, who's there now at centre half. Joe Cattermole come over to us for a brief spell and gone over with them, so he's got some experience. So, you know, I've been looking at their results as of late, and you know, they're on the up. So yeah, it will be a tough fixture. We're not at full strength tonight. We've got a couple missing, but we're certainly confident, especially after Saturday's result against Brixham, that we can get the win that we need. Hamish Hurst, our captain's back in tonight as well, after missing the last two. So yeah, we'll see, but we're certainly confident, and we'll be going for all 3 points tonight, that's for sure.
Because from going from one end of the table to the other, after Welton Rovers, you've got Barnstable at the weekend, and that's going to be a very different challenge for you and your players, isn't it?
Very much so. We've played them twice this season, obviously home in the league and also at our place in the cup, and we actually, I think it was the Les Phillips, so we rested 5 or 6 of our main starters that game, but we were 4-0 down in 20 minutes. They were a very good side. That was under Laird as well, and he's obviously at Oldland now, but they were just strong, physical, organised, and I would say that's probably one of the toughest games that we've had this season was Barnstable. So yeah, it's going to be a real difficult game, but like I said earlier, that I think we're now getting to that stage where we drew with Clevedon, we only lost 1-0 to Falmouth, we only lost 1-0 to Bridgewater on a Friday night. So I think certainly we've got to go with backing ourselves and thinking that we can beat anybody on our day. I think the time has gone now where
we were working out what teams were like, how they played, who they had playing for them, what their shape was, because we're five games now to the end of the season, so we played everybody. But we just got to go in with the mindset of let's take it to them and see how they respond. So yeah, I think on our day with a full strength side, we can challenge anybody, regardless of our league position right now. So yeah, we're prepping for next year already, if I'm honest, Ian. But it will be interesting to see, how tonight goes first, how people recover, and what we've got available for Saturday.
And my thanks to Nick for his time. Now, Stoner, we have a message from our sponsors.
Whatever the job, with over 25,000 products in stock and ready to go, you can click, collect and conquer at Toolstation.
Well, I guess the other message from our sponsors is that Toolstation will not be the headline sponsor of the Western League next season. You may well have seen that advertised on social media and via our website. That means that this time next season, you won't be listening to the Toolstation Western League podcast, but I am pleased to say that you will be listening to the Western League podcast. I'm not going anywhere. Tom's not going anywhere. You'll still get the bulletin. There will be changes, of course, to the website, and particularly as other sponsors come on board, we'll keep you updated with that. But I can assure you that normal service will be resuming without Toolstation. We are very grateful for their long association with our league, but all things come to an end and the world moves on. And any other developments that are related to either the end of the Toolstation sponsorship or the start of new relationships, we will of course be bringing you over the coming months. Now, we'll move on to our First Division games, and we're going to kick off with another very strong performance for a side that I imagine you know pretty well, Stoner, Bitton.
Yeah, to be fair, I've had a good relationship with Bitton over the years through more sort of the early parts of Footy Watch when AG was involved, obviously a good friend of mine locally. I used to watch a lot of those games, and it was nice to catch up with James Skinner on the sidelines, who very much committed to Bitton and local football himself. So yeah, it's a nice club, Bitton. I'm actually contemplating getting over there before the end of the season, but I'm off on holiday Friday, so if I can get squeeze a game in when I come back, that'd be great. But obviously with their game, the weekend, Joe Beardswell's early penalty helped kickstart Bitton into a 4-1 defeat of Bristol Telephones. That's all it says on that.
No, I know, mate. I know. And that's because we don't have a great deal of information in this week's bulletin on the Bitton game, which is a good reason. I got to talk to their manager this week, Will Justin. And we started off by talking about that match against Bristol Telephones and the performance of his side.
Yeah, I mean, I think we owed them one. We played them back in November and they beat us on a Friday night. We just didn't turn up in the game. We were really poor. But I said to the lads, we're minding on that on Saturday and that we needed a result. And just carry on really the good form that we're in, really. And yeah, we're pleasing. I think we're dominant in the game for large spells of it. I think they had probably a 15-minute spell in the second half where they come out after half time and sort of create a few chances. Got a penalty, got one back, made it 2-1. And then we went on and then sort of dominated the game from there, really. We sort of changed shape and then ended up with a 4-1 win, which was quite nice.
Because that was your fourth win on the spin, wasn't it? I mean, what do you put that good run of form down to?
To be honest, Ian, we've been in a real good form since... We've only lost one game since playing Telephones back in November the 3rd. So I think we've been in good form for a long time. I think we've drew the odd game here and there, which is probably what's cost us throughout the season, I think. But other than that, we've been really consistent. I think we lost to Wells away was the only game we've lost since then, which, again, is new. I think we lost 2-1, and they're in a good form themselves. So we're looking back on it, we've done really well, and the boys are just motivated just to sort of finish as high as we can, really.
Yeah, interesting you mention that game against Wells, because you've got draws as well against Radstock and Portishead. So, I mean, not only have you played the top teams, but obviously you've acquitted yourself well against the top teams.
Yeah, I mean, Portishead, they're a good side, obviously. see where they are on the table. We drew at them early in the season, and they scored a 99th minute equaliser against us. So that was, and then at home, the home game was a real end-to-end game, to be honest. If you could have gone either way, both teams having real good chances. So for me, that was two really good games. Again, with Briz, we beat Briz at their place. They beat us at our place. Cribbs Reserves, we beat already. So, Radstock, we've beat them at their place, and they drew at ours. So to be honest, we in and around the top six, we've been as good as anyone. I think it's just a lack of few too many draws. I think that's what's cost us, to be honest.
Like that one all draw at Odd Down, I guess.
Yeah, again, that one where we've dominated the game and they've hit a wonder strike, and we had another one at Shire. It was the same thing. 1-0 up, really comfortable in the game, not really taking our chances in the game, and they've hit a wonder strike. And we've drew both those games where we need to convert those points into 3 points, and I think would have been right up there. So
Odd Down are a funny side, aren't they? Because I saw them play Radstock and they got a draw. I mean, admittedly, they sort of got it with the last kick of the game, but they just didn't look like a side that should be down where they are in the league table. They really did hold their own against Radstock. And I guess that's just a sign of this strength in depth that we're seeing again in the first division this season.
They put the board on the line, they work for one another. And there's a lot of clubs like that. There's a lot of teams. I mean, we've lost twice to Middlesbrough this year. And they were a strange side to play. But I think the Western League, that's the one thing with it, with so many games, if you're not at your game, you'll lose the game. And I think that's where we've sort of tried steadying the ship. We've signed a few players which have steadied us a little bit in the right areas. I mean, we've been hit with massive amount of injuries. That's 3 ACLs and 2 meniscus. That was that spell in the middle part of the season where we dropped points and lost a few games. Since getting people back and a few new signings, we've really kicked on from that.
And, of course, the weather's been playing havoc with us all as well, isn't it, over recent weeks, which has got us into this situation where I see from your fixtures, you've got 7 games to play between now and the end of the season. I mean, how are you coping with that workload at the moment?
It's difficult. I mean, it's difficult for everyone. There's no one in any good. And I think it could. I think the league could be caused by whoever got the biggest squad, because I think it could cause an upset. I really do. Teams like Portishead, it should run away with it. Like, they've done well and they've been out there all year. Fair play to them. But they've got a lot of games, and it just could be a case of it could cost them the league with the amount of games. So, I mean, the thing with us, we've just had to rotate our squad, and hopefully we keep playing as well as we are.
It's an interesting point, isn't it? Because, of course, over the course of the season, you look at games in hand and you think that, you know, that they're a big factor. And I know that that was a big factor in the conversations I've had with managers about Brislington this season, that they've expected them to sort of come late and go on one of their customary unbeaten runs and get that momentum and put scoreboard pressure on the teams that are above them. But this current weather situation has turned the tables on that, hasn't it, really? That actually games in hand are not your friend.
The problem is you get yourself up for the big games because they're the big games. But then you've got to go and then play on a Thursday. And then all of a sudden, your lads aren't really at it because you just had a big game on a Tuesday. And then you drop points. You're not at the races. And I think that's where it could cost a few teams, is that for sure.
I know in the past, some sides have reveled in that momentum, that if you get a couple of games on the bounce and you can keep your players fit, you can keep that level of performance and confidence going. And I guess the opposite is true as well, isn't it? Even if you're a good side, if you go to a freak result, that loss of confidence could actually 2 or 3 matches, you know, on the bounce and cost you.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think most teams now are playing Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, which it's a lot of football. It's a lot of football with full-time jobs and stuff. And I think you pick up a niggle and an injury and it can cost you, especially if it's a key position or your main striker or a keeper, or do you know what I mean? It can really cost your team, and it can, if you're not far in that one game and you don't take your chances. And you've seen a few freak results the last couple of weeks, to be honest with you, when you've looked back and gone, God, there was a couple of weekends and it was like you just put that down to the amount of games we're playing.
Well, we talked about some of the big sides earlier. One of the big sides I don't think we did mention was Wincanton Town, and you've got them up next. That is going to be a real challenge for you, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think we could have asked for better preparation in playing Bristol Telefilms on Saturday, to be honest with you, because they're both similar sides, both strong physical sides. So it was definitely good prep for that. Yeah, I like it. Good game. Always a good game against us and Wincanton. So they beat us early on in the season. And again, that scoreline didn't reflect the game at all. We could have quite easily been the other way around. So we remember the game quite well, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be I think who wins that game will finish above each other, in fairness.
Well, if that didn't add more jeopardy to the tie, I think that's it's one of only three home games you've got left before the end of the season. The punters will get a good display of football, I've got absolutely no doubt. Obviously, you've got a sort of a derby clash with Cadbury Heath on the 11th. But, it would be a crying shame if you didn't get a good gate for that game against Wincanton Town.
Yeah, I think we will do. I think it'd be a real entertaining game. They're like I said, they've been out there all season, like they always are. They're always a good side. They have been the last couple of years, always been in and around it. They've been in the playoffs twice. Unfortunately, they failed on both occasions. So I'm hoping that they're probably trying to look to put that right this year.
And my thanks to Will for his time. Now, hopefully, Stoner, we'll have a little bit more information on the game between Longwell Green Sports and Wells City. Wells City have been on a fantastic run of form recently. It's something that Tom and I have reflected on recent podcasts. But they came up against an immovable object in Longwell Green on the weekend.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Ian, obviously Wells, I've got a little sneaky suspicion they could be the little silent ones that are just creeping their way up the table, but... You know, as you said, the most impressive team performance of the day belonged to Longwell Green, who ended Wells' eight-match winning streak with a 13 comfortable 4-2 victory. Doubles from Liam Oswin and Finn Burnell did the business for Longwell, who led for almost the entirety of the 90 minutes, with Finn Wilkinson scoring twice in defeat for the sixth-place Wells.
Yeah, I think I predicted that Wells were going to win this one. So I can only imagine that Chris Allway was playing that in the changing room, saying, look, Knockolds has written us off. and they've gone out there and they've done the business. Another good reason why doing these predictions is messing with my head. But anyway, one final game for us to cover. There were six goals in that game between Longwell Green and Wales City. Portishead Town said, hold my beer. But you were there, weren't you?
I did go to that one, yeah. I was meeting up with some old work friends on Saturday. So it was it needed to be a close-by fixture for me. So I'd earmarked Portishead as I was meeting friends in Weston, and thought I can catch the Portishead on the way back through. Although, after checking Footballer, I noticed it had been moved to the GFA headquarters, which again is still quite close to home. So I got there just about 2 or 3 minutes after kickoff. Yeah, it was a very much a one-sided performance, about being too disrespectful to Warminster. Portishead were strong, scored some good goals, moved the ball very well, but. Second place in the table, Portishead took out a lot of their frustrations on Warminster, scoring seven unanswered goals to increase their huge advantage of goal difference and standings. Callum Townsend was the main man during the opening stages after heading Portishead into an early lead, and then turned provider for Callum Eastwood to convert his cross for a 2-0 within 20 minutes. It then became the Ethan Feltham show, which obviously everybody's aware of this name, and he started opening with his first goal of the afternoon, which took him to number 46 for the season, breaking the club record. But he wasn't finished there, however, having scored again late in the first half. He bagged another shortly after the restart to complete yet another hat-trick. The game was done and dusted at that stage, but the host kept pushing for more goals, with James Crossley, John and Jack Ball completing the scoring. Like I said, I was at that one, and it was very much a one-sided affair of Warminster, however, you know, even at 3-0, 4-0 down, they were still battling and competing, but the quality on show for Portishead was very good, and I think one of my tweets actually said something playing like champions, so not to tempt fate, but they did look good, and you know, if I was a betting man, I think they would be my pick for the title, to be honest.
Well, I think we'll come to that in a little bit, because we are going to have a look at the upcoming fixtures. Now, there's a lot of games that are going to be played in the week. Unfortunately, that's going to become the norm for the rest of this month as we try and get all the fixtures played before the scheduled dates for our playoffs. But over the last couple of weeks, Stoner, Tom and I have been picking our matches and we've been predicting scores, would you believe it? So I'm going to let you go first. These are the games that are going to be played on Saturday, the 13th of April. Which game have you gone for?
So for me in the Premier Division, I've gone for Torpoint at home to Shepton Mallet. Obviously, Shepton Mallet sitting in seventh and Torpoint in ninth. So there's not a lot of points between them. And obviously, you know, teams pushing for playoffs. So I am going to go for an away victory and I'm going to go Shepton 2, Torpoint 1 in that game.
Ooh, Torpoint, you never quite know what you're going to get with Torpoint. I think they're a good, good side at home. So I think I'm going to upset all the good people of Shepton Mallet by saying this, but I think it might be 2-1 to Torpoint Athletic. There we go. Oh, dear. I'll never be able to show my face in Shepton again. Right, the game that I'm going to go for is Barnstaple Town against Nousey and Tickenham. And one of the reasons for that is not just because we obviously spoke to Nick Steadman on this week's podcast, but one of the features you will have heard during that interview is the fact that Nousey and Tickenham, they're a team that's never out of a game. They never get a hiding. They've been competitive against all the sides, even the big sides that they've played. So I think this is going to be narrow. I'm going to make Barnstaple favourites because I think they're very good and I think they're even better at home. But I don't think that they're going to be out of sight here. I'm going to go Barnstaple Town 2, Nousey and Tickenham 1.
Okay, so for me, as mad as this sounds, I've never seen Nelsie and Tickenham lose. Every game I've watched, they've either won or drew. So I'm going to, although I'm not actually attending that one, I'm going to stick with my unbeaten record and I'm going to one or draw in that game.
Wow. Good stuff. Right then, and in the First Division, Stoner, what game are you going to go for here?
So in that game, although I've obviously been mentioning a lot about the Porter's Head title charge, Radstock are obviously still sat on top of the table in first place, so I'm going to go for Radstock away at Boco, and again another club I've built a good relationship with over the coming weeks, over the previous weeks with Boco, got some great people there, so I'm going to go for that. And again, I would say defensively Boco are a difficult side to break down, and if they can go a goal in front, they do sort of tend to sort of build on that and see the game through. But I think Radstock may slightly edge this one, so I'm going to go for 2-1 to Radstock.
Yeah, I think that Boco, we know on their day they are a good side, but Radstock, I think I know that they beat them earlier in the season. Obviously, that would have been at Southfields Recreation Ground. I think that tells me that they've got enough in the locker. I watched Radstock a bit recently. I saw them up at Odd Down, and they're the sort of team that has the capacity to beat themselves. So as long as they're all fit and firing, then I think that Radstock will have enough to win this. I'm going to go 2-1 Radstock.
Yeah, same as me. I think they've done a great job there, to be fair. Ray, I like Ray as a character, and Elliot, you know, is a good management team. I also do like their content on social media because it's very entertaining. And you know, you speak to them both, and they, you know, at the moment they're currently sat top of the table, and they'll tell you that they don't think they should be there. So whether that's a bit big over social media, who knows? But
you're not suggesting that's a bit of kidology, are you?
Well, knowing Ray, quite possibly.
Yeah, I think some of the managers I speak to have got another way of referring to it. I think kidology is probably quite a polite word. But on a serious point, I have to say, obviously the stuff that they've been putting out over social media this season has been outstanding. The highlight packages and everything.
Yeah, it got a guy, I spoke to him briefly at Ancient Town, and he sort of goes around and does all the recording and then goes back and edits it all. And I mean, I think it's refreshing for the league. Some clubs that I go to, they'll post a starting up, a half-time score and a full-time score. And that's, you know, understand it's difficult to get somebody to be in around the club to do all these things on a match day. But to have, you know, a designated guy to go around and video and, you know, the training, he's everywhere. It's brilliant. It's fantastic content and great to watch.
If we've bigged him up so much, we do need to give him a name check. It's Yannick Lesniak. So he's the guy who's doing all of that work for Radstock. Very friendly chap. You know, as you say, Stone, if you do get a chance to say hello to him, he's always giving me a wave. So, does great work.
he's a nice guy. I got his mobile number from when I'd sponsored a game, Radstock against Briz, and it's still yet to go ahead. It's been postponed three times. But Yannick got in touch with me for some imagery and stuff like that, and bits and pieces for a promotional post, sort of pre-game. But obviously the game failed a pitch inspection. So I think, from memory, I think Elliot said it's now scheduled for the 23rd of the month, which is the day after I come back from holiday. So I should hopefully still be able to get up there and watch that, which again, it's got all potential for a big game and a big in deciding maybe an outcome of the league.
Absolutely, that's Radstock's last home game of the season. So that will be one hell of a an occasion at Southfield Recreation Ground. But before we get to the 23rd, we've still got to resolve the games we're looking at on the 13th. And the pick of the games that I'm going to go for, one of the other sides that we talk about an awful lot on the podcast, is Wincanton Town. Now, they're taking on Bristol Telephones. Bristol Telephones' form of late hasn't been fantastic, but they are a good side on their day, and they've got good pedigree. They've got some very good players there. They'll give anybody a game. And in fact, earlier this season, they did exactly that to Wincanton. They beat them. They beat them 4-1. Now, that's going to go one of two ways. Wincanton will have revenge on their minds, or it might suggest that Telephones have got something over them, whether they've got this, they found the secret to unlock the Wincanton defence. I think it will be an incredibly competitive tie. I'm going to back Wincanton, not least because they're at home, but it wouldn't surprise me if Telephones do pull off an upset. But I can't see this being another repeat of the 4-1 scoreline, even if Wincanton are victorious. So I'm going to go Wincanton 2, Bristol Telephones 0.
Okay, yeah, I think very much I'm in agreement with a lot of things you've said. Obviously, Wincanton sitting in fourth at the moment, and they're only 5 points off the top spot. And I think they're also very quiet contenders for pushing themselves, into contention. So I think Wincanton will win as well, and I'm going to go for 3-1 in that game to Wincanton.
Right then, before we wrap things up, Stoner, we will have a quick look at the league tables. Now, if we look at the top of the Premier Division, is it looking like a three-horse race to you?
I think so. I think Bridgewater they're close, but I think it's a bit too far. I personally think it's between Helston and Falmouth. I know Clevedon are only 4 points off the top, but they have played a couple of games more. So I think as long as Helston and Falmouth can continue to keep winning their games, they'll just give themselves that little bit of a push away from Clevedon. And then, yeah, I mean, it's a battle between those two, I think, for the title. Difficult to say. Both very good sides, but
difficult to split them. And when we talk about that, it's always a bit of a... obviously, two go up. One of them's going to do it through the playoffs. And I guess in a situation where you want the best two teams to be promoted out of the division, no disrespect to any of the other sides at the top of the division, because they're all very good sides. But I guess whoever doesn't manage to win the league, they're going to have to go again, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you look at the top. Well, even if you say maybe down to the top, the eight teams, all those eight teams from Brixham at eighth up to Helston at first, are all very, very good sides. Very good sides. The playoffs is a great thing. The playoffs, obviously, great for neutral. If you're involved as a club, not so when you drop out, but to compete for that second place, like you said, you're talking good sides, and any one of them can have a chance. So. I don't know. It'd be very difficult to choose who's going to win this. But
With all the talk of the weather and the fixture congestion that we're getting, unfortunately, it feels like that is going to have a part to play in how the players are prepared mentally and physically for the playoffs. Because on any other day, when we hadn't had so many games to complete by the end of the month, perhaps teams could have been better prepared. But that could be a factor, couldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've noticed today a couple of lads on Twitter today that I'm looking that are travelling, down on a Tuesday and take half a day's work, like Bristol-based lads, to go and face teams further afield. That always comes into play as well. So, going back to, like your Porter said, with your main man up top scoring you 46 goals, if he's working one day and he can't get there, that could be the difference of you winning or losing the games, which will obviously give the advantage to other people. So I think as these games come in thick and fast, injuries, you know, players' availability and everything else, it's going to have a big factor to who remains in the playoffs or who pushes for the top spot. So, again, makes it brilliant, makes it interesting. But it would have been interesting to see maybe where the league table would have lied if some of these games were on and there wasn't so many teams. It's pretty close actually, to be fair, with games played, obviously, with the top two on 28 and Cleveland on 30, and then you've got 29, 27, 29. So there's not a lot between them, but I know some of the games down in the first division, a lot of them have got an advantage on games played over others. So I think that will have a big impact on maybe who finishes top. But like I said, if you're asking me to pick one today, I don't know who I could choose.
Well, let's have a look at the first division. Radstock Town are on top of the pile. They've played 38 games. That's four more than Portishead. We know that Portishead are in a good run of form. But given just how many games some of these sides, including Portishead, I mean, I think it's particularly bad for Cheddar at the other end of the table. But, you know, normally when we get to this end of the season, games in hand are considered almost like a luxury. But I wonder whether they're more of a curse, because, of course, if clubs get availability problems, or dare I say it, injury problems, then the form book could easily go out the window.
Most definitely. I was actually speaking to Elliot in the beginning of the month, say, and he asked me for my prediction on what I thought the top 1-7 would be in Division 1. And I've got it written down, but I'm not going to tell you. But and he wouldn't tell me his, but he said mine was very close. I personally think Portishead will win it. I've watched them a couple of times. I watched them against Bogdan a few weeks ago. They beat them 9-0. I watched them against Warminster on Saturday. They beat them 7-0. And again, I'm not being disrespectful to either of the two teams, but Portishead didn't really, once they went for one or two ahead, three ahead, they never looked like losing, but looked like double figures in all those games. That being said, I did watch them on the Tuesday night over at Brislington, which they lost 2-1, and that was a more physical game. So like you were just mentioning about fixture pile-ups and player availability, I think if you get down to some of the nitty-gritty games, the teams lower down that don't want to go down, that fight that they can find within themselves could derail Portishead slightly. And again, who knows? The old-fashioned, it's better to have points on the board than games in hand. I mean, they have got four games in hand on Radstock and only 3 points behind, but you've got to win those games in hand, haven't you, to get the points.
Then there's Brislington, isn't there? Because one of the consistent things I've noticed in all of the interviews I've done with managers this season is that they've refused to count Brislington out of the title race. And when you look at it on paper, if Brislington won their games in hand, they would far exceed Radstock's current points total. Yeah. But the problem is now that they've got so many games to play in such a small period of time, player availability and injury, I mean, fatigue, if nothing else. I mean, it's almost reminiscent of the time, I don't know if you remember a few seasons ago, when Buckland Athletic had to play, I think it was something like 11 games in 13 days. I mean, we're really in that territory, aren't we?
Yeah, it is crazy. I did a doubleheader on over the bank holiday weekend. I was talking to a lad who plays for Hammond. I know it's a completely different league. But he said he had 17 games left to play this season.
Blimey.
Two of them were cup, 15 league games. And yeah, like you say, fatigue, availability, injuries, there's a lot to, I don't think you can ever write Brislington out of anything. I've got a lot of time for the people there. I enjoy going to Brislington. They're a great club. They've got great people on the pitch, off the pitch, extremely supportive of my stuff that I do with footy watching and the charity stuff. And quality-wise, arguably, maybe putting myself out there to say this, but arguably one of the best teams in the division, and you know, probably premier level as opposed to first division, but you know, they're in that league for the reasons they're in it. But the players are good, they've got a good side and they can play well, but again, like you say, you've got to have them available, you've got to have them fit. So yeah, who knows? Again, it's a different, very much, I'd probably say the first division is probably, I was just going to say, it's probably harder to predict the top three in the first division than it is the Prem, because like you said, there is teams with games in hand. They've still got to play each other in some of those games as well, which can obviously have an impact and a swing on the points. So yeah, a hard one, another hard one to pick, but I do think Portishead will win it, if I'm honest.
There we go. Now, we are coming towards the end of this week's episode, but before we do sign off, when we were talking earlier about the fundraising that you do for Cystic Fibrosis Comfort Fund, you mentioned that you started doing it because of what happened to your friend Sam. Can you tell us a little bit about Sam and about the circumstances that led you to start campaigning and collecting money for cystic fibrosis?
Yeah, so obviously, his name was Sam. Obviously, we all called him Sid. That was his nickname. So if I revert back to Sid, obviously, because that's how we all knew him. I was involved with Avon May Football Club at the time, which would be a team that we'll all be talking about next year with their achievements that they've done with the Gloucester County League. They'll be in the Western League themselves next year. But Sid used to come along and his mates were playing and stuff like that. So he wasn't ever really able to play. And then obviously it became obvious why, because of his condition with CF. But always used to come along to the games. He was always in the dugout with us. We'd always have a laugh and a joke and everything else. And he became a big part of my life. Me and my wife were expecting our first child, and having him around, and Jack and Charlie Harris, that were brothers, it was only like having three sons. They were always our house, raiding the cupboards and watching football over the weekends and things like that. So it was a big part of my life. And then obviously with cystic fibrosis then, because this was like 13, 14 years ago, with the treatment that was available and everything else, and the way he kind of lived his life to the max, he was never really going to exceed, you know, an older age, and it was limited life anyway. And obviously, say, he sadly passed away at the age of 21. So being that he was a big part of my life, I just felt I'd like to sort of keep the flame burning, really, in his memory, and try and do things, you know, in a positive way that could keep raising awareness for CF, keep allowing me to be able to talk about him. And obviously, what a better way than to being able to do that through the football community, which, like I said, at the beginning, they've been extremely supportive. The fundraising, the warm-up T-shirts. I've got little pin badges, which you see on people all around the various grounds I'm going to. So it's just great that, you know, the platform of the local football community can be so supportive and assist me in, you know, in being able to raise as much awareness as I can for a charity that means so much to me, really.
So for those people who are listening to this, particularly if they've been touched by the condition of cystic fibrosis, where would you recommend they go, one, to find out more information, but also perhaps listening to your words, where could they make a donation to this charity?
So obviously on my page, there's a link at the top, a direct link, which you can click onto the Cystic Fibrosis Comfort Fund page. But the website address itself is cfcomfort.co.uk, and then obviously you can click onto that. There's lots of information on there. There's headers at the top that you can click onto the links. It tells you about who we are as a trust. There's a nice clicking on to meet the team, and you can see people from the team. You can click and see what CF is. There's fundraising ideas. There's a column from recent donations, which it shows the clubs that have supported, their donations are on that. And then there's a donate button on there, so you can click on there. You can make donations through through the website, and obviously all that money goes direct. Like I said, it goes direct to the fund. There is a Cystic Fibrosis Trust, which is like the global organisation. Obviously, this is the Comfort Fund, which is based in Bristol for local people. So this is what I tend to do. This is the one. I mean, I am an ambassador for this charity anyway, but this is why I do it for this, because they looked after Sid when he was young, and I went to we had a coffee morning at Gloucester Cricket Club the end of last month, and I went along there and met some other parents, and it's nice to see that the fundraising that we're doing, it goes back into people, you know, that you could be walking past locally in the street type of thing, and be able to speak to, not the money that goes in and gets lost in a big organisation that obviously still helps everybody, but this is done obviously on a more personal level. So yeah, it's good. And it can be anything from, it could be like medical equipment that they need, grants, helping with like driving lessons. It could be helping with costs to get them to and from hospital, all sorts of things. It's a great, and the people involved are fantastic. Kathy, she was the lady that kind of got me on board with doing this, and she looked after Sid when he was in hospital, and she's an absolute angel. She's such a wonderful, wonderful lady, and got a heart of gold. So it's just nice to be able to be part of such a great team with everybody, you know, all trying to do something positive for such a great cause.
Well, I've been very grateful to you for being part of my team for this week's podcast. Normally when we conclude the podcast, it's Tom's opportunity to tell everybody where they can find his bulletin. I have to say, listeners, just in case you didn't work it out, of course, the reports that Stoner was reading out have come from Tom's bulletin, and that is on the usual place on the Toolstation Western League website. But we won't be going out with that plug. We're going to be going out with a slightly different one, because of course we have been talking to Mr. Footy Watch himself. So Stoner, just in case anybody on planet Earth is not familiar with your excellent social media site, where can they find you?
So obviously Twitter, as we all know it as, but it is X, I guess. But my handle is @AS_footyreview. And I've also got an Instagram page, which is the same handle, @AS_footyreview. So I tend to do my, like I said, my live feature through Twitter, and then I'll do an analysis conclusion with a few pictures on my Instagram afterwards. But before I do go in as well, I just want to say one other quick thing. Obviously, I had the pleasure of bumping into yourself over at Clevedon for all the work that you do for the Mind charity, and let alone your hard work that you put into this football podcast. I think you're also a massive, massive part of grassroots football, well known, well respected, and well appreciated for the work you do. And I think the work that you do alongside your charity stuff with Mind is fantastic as well. So just want to say well done to yourself. I know you're obviously giving me an opportunity to speak about the Comfort Fund and everything else, but mental health is massive at the moment. And I'm pretty sure as a man myself, it's difficult to reach out and speak to people when you're feeling, you know, at your lowest point. So I think the fact that you're plugging that within the football community, I'm sure it's affected a lot of people. And I'm sure it's also helping a lot of people with the awareness and support and site there that you've done. So.
Well, thank you very much. Funnily, and we try not to be time specific when doing podcasts, because obviously people are going to be listening to this all sorts of different times. But I don't mind admitting that Stoner and I are recording this on Tuesday the 9th. And actually, literally as we finish, I'll be going out the door to do the first bucket collection we've done in Wiltshire, which will be at Bradford Town and their game against Warminster Town. So that work continues. I know you. That's something that you know. Stoner, because actually if you believe in a cause, you've got to keep going.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
You don't,
that's
you, right. You can't, it's not tokenism, is it?
No, and I mean, I've spoken to a few people, like I said, I wouldn't ever name names, but I've spoken to a few people through social media that struggle, and, you know, it's nice to have a pair of ears to listen to people and be supportive. So I understand that mental health is massive, and I think you know, the work that you're doing to raise awareness of that alongside grassroots football is brilliant, Ian. Like I said, well, you know, you deserve a pat on the back, not just for all the work that you do football related, but also, you know, also for mental health. I think it's brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
Well, what a note to end on. Stoner, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. Have you enjoyed it?
I've loved it, Ian. I've absolutely loved it. Like I said, I'm off on holiday on Friday for 10 days in the sun, so I'll be tuning into all the football updates whilst I'm away and looking at games that I could have been getting to whilst I'm sat on a sun lounger. But everybody deserves a holiday, so I'm looking forward to a nice break with the family.
Excellent. Well, listeners, don't worry. We'll be back next week with the Toolstation Western League podcast.